Welcome to the OA Virtual Kitchen Sink Meeting Podcast. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live and how to donate to support this meeting and our podcasts. The opinions expressed on the Kitchen Sink Podcast are those of the individual speakers and do not represent OA as a whole. And now, our speaker.
This is Elizabeth, compulsive eater and restrictor. Actually, this week, I was able to see 9 years in the rooms. September 4th was when I came in for the first time. And this week, I am also now a 100 pounder. So I can notice that with you as well. I did not come into the rooms 9 years ago because I needed to lose weight, even though I did. And I didn't come into the rooms even because I thought I had a food problem, even though I did. I was in a coaching program and the coach mentioned to someone else that she should maybe look at OA. And then I was talking to somebody else who became my first sponsor in the program. We had met in another kind of personal development situation who said, oh, by the way, I've been doing this. And then I heard somewhere else. Oh, wait, anyway, like I'm superstitious enough to know that if something shows up that many times, like it's probably for me. So I went to the website and there was questions, like 15 questions, and I answered the questions and I didn't like those answers. And so I did an analysis about intensity and frequency and, you know, like I was going to find the answer in the answers and realize like the lady doth protest too much. Like, okay, the website said, go to 6 meetings before you make a decision. Oh, great. I could take action and still not commit. Like this was my jam. Like, so yes, let me go. So I started attending meetings, and because I was in this coaching program, I committed to going to 3 meetings before the next time I had to report. And I was on vacation, so I went in Massachusetts, and I didn't know OA had flavors. And I walked into an OA HAL meeting, and they handed me that piece that we read at the beginning. You know, rarely have we seen. I got 2 sentences in, I handed it back, and I'm like, no, I can't read this. To me, it was elitist and exclusionary, and no, I couldn't do it. Now, I had made a scene by this point, so I wasn't going to leave. You know, I'm enough of a good girl to know that. So I sat there, and wow, did I judge you all. I had so many stories about what you were and were not as a result of my perception of the paragraphs that I refused to read. And while this was an OA HAL meeting and they were very, you know, you couldn't even speak unless you had 90 days free of sugar, flour, and wheat. I don't know what that has to do with anything. And I heard, even though I didn't understand what, like I heard people talking about life with an ease I didn't know was possible, an ease that I didn't know I was missing, didn't know how to get. Like it was something like it, yeah, I had to stay. I had to, what is it? I don't know. So I went to the 6 different meetings and I, you know, learned more about the flavors and I learned more about the rhythm of things and then at my 6th meeting, I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do. Like now I have to commit. And somebody said, you know, you don't have to believe to stay. And that was so lovely. And I know that the piece talks about like, you know, there's no gentler, easier way. But the reality is that for me, recovery was only possible with an enormous amount of gentleness. I know there's a phrase in the rooms that people say, like, next right action. I can't even do that. What's the next available action? Like, is it available to you, Elizabeth? Like, okay, great. Try that. Right. And that has been how I've needed to go one day at a time for 9 years. It made a lot of sense to me that I had a life problem and food seemed to be the substance I went to. And really what recovery has given me is a way to navigate life, like me in my real life, me in the circumstances of life, me in this body, me in my family, me in my job, right? Like And learning that I don't need all the circumstances to be, ideal or whatever it is I think they have to be for me to be okay. Like I got to separate what was happening around me or even inside my head or in my body from my okayness. And I okay got to live by itself because one day at a time I got to take the next available action. One day at a time I got enough information to have a new experience. And I would love to say like I did the step work and I got healed and I was fine. Nope, I did the steps I think now 3 times, and I got a lot out of them. And I also, as a result of working the steps and as a result of making direct amends to myself and as a result of really taking my life seriously, like it led me to other things. So I like in order for me to recover, I needed to get outside help. I needed to get support, medically. I needed to do all kinds of things very much as part of my recovery as the result of working the steps. It wasn't simply the answers that went on paper that healed me. And yet they made it possible for me to get things that did make my life work. I feel like when I hear that sentence, like we deal with food cunning and baffling, for me, it's I deal with life that's cunning and baffling. And food, is the substance of choice in many instances. And sometimes it's money and sometimes it's spending and sometimes it's, spider solitaire and sometimes it's, but I deal with life that's cunning and baffling. And really cunning and baffling, as a result of working other programs, cunning and baffling to, one of the members in my head, which may or may not be me, probably not the adult me in recovery, right? And so like, how do I become a good parent or a good human to the choir in my head that's upset and recognize that the me in recovery is actually good. We're okay. Like we have what we need at any given point, and I can then do service to that part of myself that is inflamed in some way. And then food becomes not necessary to act out on, perhaps in that moment. My first friend in recovery talked about higher power as being the deal maker, the one out in front, making the best deal possible with the available circumstances. And I can take the deal or not. It's not necessary for me to take the deal. And but the higher power is always out in front, making the best deal possible with the available circumstances. And that was like a relief, an enormous amount of freedom for me to just walk boldly through my life. In my first fourth step, I didn't do a sex inventory because, I wasn't having sex and I had very little sex and it was kind of like, I don't need to do that. And, I guess I'm never having sex again. I don't know. Somehow that was, somehow that worked or didn't. And then about a year later, I realized like, oh, wait a minute. This is a normal part of life. Like it's not a normal part of my life. Like what's happening? And, that same friend said, try to say yes more often. And so I developed like, what would it look like for me to engage in a whole part of life that included sex? And then I was like, well, what happens if I go overboard in this? Because that was, and my friend said, well, there's a program for that. Like, it doesn't really like, oh, I'm going to spend too much money. Well, there's a program for that. Well, I'm going to like collect too much stuff. There's a program for that. Like, there's, I get to like walk freely into life because I don't have to worry about what's going to show up because there's a program for that. It's okay, right? Like all of us in all the rooms just have a life problem. And then sometimes substances get attached to that and they become outsized. And the program just helps me right size all these things. Step three for me, I came from a very, very religious background and, God's will was beaten over my head in a religious setting in a way that I did not want to hear here. It's not, no, thank you. I've given at the office. No thanks. But I went to the workshops and I did the exercises and, I one step at a time, I took action in terms of like, I'm just gonna blindly like hit my mark, say my line. Like, let me just show up, keep showing up over and over and over. And things kept opening up little by little, right? And so I understand in step three, turned my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand God. I knew for sure that I didn't have a lot of care in my life before recovery. And my first willingness to play with step three was to just cooperate with care, just welcome care, just receive care as it showed up. And I have to say that is really like how I take step three today, right? I have some medical issues, and why do I go to the doctor? Why do I do what they tell me to do? Why do I take the treatments, right? Because this is cooperating with care. And this is step three. Does that mean the doctor is my higher power? No. Hell no. No. But I know that cooperating with care reminds me that it's not all up to me, and it's never been all up to me. And yet in my disease, that's what I'm convinced, that it's just, me alone against the world. And that's just never been true. That was something that my teenage self needed to believe to get me through the day. And at 53, I have outgrown her. And so we can break up with those, the self-sufficiency and the self-sufficiency and the cynicism and the snark and that, right? Like, because they're just the best she could do at the time, but that's not true for me today. And so I get to discover, all of that. And so I kind of take issue with, resisting the easier, gentler way, because for me, recovery has been softening into the easier, gentler way of allowing things to bloom and unfold and grow and take their time. If you had told me 9 years ago what my life would look like, I'm sure I would have left and never came back. It was just be too scary, even though my life looks like way better than it did 9 years ago. But how would I get from here to there? Right? But I didn't get from here to there. I did one available action at a time. I did one cooperation with care at a time. I showed up to one meeting at a time. I took one call at a time. I filled out one question at a time. Somebody taught me the bless them, change me. That works with 15 expletives in the middle. Like, you don't have to believe it. You don't have to like it. You can add all the bad words that you want to. Like, it still works, because at the end, I'm reminded, change me. Oh, right. And change me is always about softening. It's always about resisting what is fixed, right? When I am pissed off at somebody, they are fixed. The situation is fixed. I am sure that I am right. Change me is always about recognizing that because we are all parts of nature, for me, my belief doesn't mean you have to believe it, but that means we're always in motion, right? I am actively growing and dying at the same time. Like, all of that's happening for sure. And if it isn't fixed, then chances are the thing that I'm pissed off about has already changed. And how do I cooperate with the change that's happening? And it doesn't
Sorry
mean
for
that.
the interruption. You have 5 minutes.
Thank you. No worries. It doesn't mean that I'm not still mad, and it doesn't mean that the offense didn't still happen, and it, right, but it just means that's not all that's happening. That's not all that's going on. I can't tell you, like, oh, I did this step, and then therefore I understand that. I don't know how I arrived at some of these things. Like, I think I've been marinating for 9 years, and things have shifted. Sometimes in a moment of clarity, and sometimes just like over time. Sometimes because I was willing to play ball with some ideas through step work, through meetings, through service, all those things, that it became available to play ball with ideas outside the program and to learn and grow and soften and to some extent get stronger. And I feel like I have this like scaffolding inside. I have architecture that I can lean on. That kind of, but dynamic, right? Like, it sways with the wind. It's okay. We're going to stand up. We're stable. It's good, right? That I didn't have when I was trying to, I don't know, be thin enough, be pretty enough, be smart enough, be something enough, right? Like, what if the enoughness includes sometimes not having, and it's still okay? Like, I don't know. I don't know how to explain that. Like, and so, if you say, like, well, how do I get that? I don't know. Just keep coming back, right? Like, and keep coming back reminds me to keep coming back to me, keep coming back to higher power, keep coming back to meetings, keep coming back to the literature. Oh, I do want to say that. Like, there's not enough literature meetings in my world. And my early time in program, I attended meetings that were small, and so they just read the literature over and over and over, and wow, that so helped me. I worry about qualification meetings because I feel like it's almost like institutionalized stare and compare. But the literature for me is solid, right? Like I can keep coming back, and then I think like, oh, I read new things. I don't read new things. I'm new. I'm new, and I read the same things differently, right? Like I'm new. I pick up different things because that's what I need in my world at the time. And so I really want to give a big shout out for literature and keep coming back to that as well. And also it's like, a meeting in your pocket or a meeting in your book or whatever. Like, so there's never a sense of like, oh, well, I couldn't find a meeting. And now on Zoom, that's so not true. But anyway, I'm a little bit rambling. I appreciate the piece that that you read that said we are not saints, because one of the ideas that I've needed to break up with is the idea of being good or bad, of being right or wrong. It feels for me at this point, and I could change in 5 minutes, but for right now, it feels like that is always a distraction. It is always a rabbit trail that doesn't serve me, right? That I would like to say that I spend energy on things that are esteemable, not on things that are right. There's a rigidness for me in right and wrong that pits me on the opposite side of something. And so much of what I've needed to learn in recovery is about cooperation, collaboration, welcome, and often being right and wrong just leaves me isolated and solitary. And I don't really need more of that for today. And that could change, like I said, in 5 minutes. But for today, I appreciate the idea that, we're not saints. I'm not trying to get it right. I'm trying to take an action that's available to me, that is esteemable. What does esteemable mean? Well, it's in alignment with what I said I wanted to do, with what, it's kind of the best deal possible coming together with, hey, this is what I'd like to be in the world. This is what makes sense to me between me and my higher power and my sponsor and other fellows. Like, this is what showed up as important. I'd like to live in that direction. I love the language of being willing to grow in according to spiritual lines, right? Like that for me is esteemability, and I grow in that direction when I do. And when I don't, there's a program for that. It's okay. Like it's not all up to me. It's never been all up to me. I think on this meeting, I heard someone say a long time ago that they measure their abstinence by the size of their life, not by what they eat. And I would just like to say a shout out to that person. I have repeated that line over and over and over. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. This is the time for questions only. There's no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. If you asked a question last week, please wait until the first three questions have been asked before raising your hand. If you have a question, please click the raise your hand icon. I see Rachel.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I related very closely to just about everything you said, and I really appreciate that. It was really, beneficial for me, and I'm probably going to go back and listen to this podcast. And I don't know if my question makes any sense, but because I related so closely to everything you shared, I guess I want to know if you struggle with like this existential angst I have that says, okay, I'm doing the next right thing. Is this all there is? Is this good enough? Is this okay? And I don't know if my question makes any sense. I'm struggling to articulate it any more clearly.
Sure, thank you. I mean, obviously, I can't know your existential dread. I certainly live with my own. And for me, I didn't come to OA to lose 100 pounds. Like, I'm kind of like flabbergasted that that's the condition this month or this week. But for me, the issue was like I had to like disconnect the outcome from the action. And I know lots of that, you know, that is wisdom in the rooms of kind of like we're on the hook for actions, not outcomes. And that for me, like because partly because what I quote needed to accomplish was too large. It was going to happen over a long time landscape. And so like just sort of, and I'm, you know, I'm a compulsive eater. So like I have lots of need for immediate feedback. I want it to taste good. I want to feel full, but not too full. I want it to be right, like cool. I'm at a point where like I want it to be cool, but not cold, and definitely maybe just slightly chilled. Oh my God, it's okay. I got to disconnect all of that. Like, what's the next available action? And somehow, 9 years later, one available action at a time, things have, there's a story to tell in hindsight, but is it enough? Not my business. And then I can sit with the voice in my head that needs to ask that question and find out what she needs and just remind her that she's enough for me. And yeah, we can move on together or not. Like it's and you're kind of like, well, then all of this is like mental contortion. Yeah, it all is. Yeah, that's true. It's but these are all stories we tell ourselves. That's the whole game, in my opinion. So Ryan?
I, my question is that I'm sure there's been times where you're doing your right action best you can, and things aren't quite going your way. How have you handled that? What tools have you used to get through those times?
Yeah, I think, one of the challenges of a qualification meeting is that we tell the story in summary and we live the story in excruciating detail. And so, you know, there's been plenty of times when I'm thrashing about and pretty pissed off and miserable. And sometimes it lasts a short time, although I think of late it lasts shorter and shorter. And then sometimes it goes on. I have an enormous amount of support in my life. Because I'm in recovery, because I've learned to take my life seriously, I have lots of outside help. I talk to my sponsor 6 out of 7 days. I have most of my closest friends are in program. Writing for me is very, very helpful. Like there's, I feel kind of like, you know, bumper bowling in the sense that my life is padded with recovery, so I'm not going to go very far before I run into something that's going to remind me of something I need. And that doesn't mean on any given day, you know, I show up unrecovered, and get pissed off at something. But I would say, yeah, ha having built a life like that, but also writing super helps, literature helps, going to a meeting helps, sleep helps a lot, like just. You know, yeah, and just an enormous amount of support that I've built into my life so that it's not me by myself solving myself. It's just never been up to me all by myself ever. And when I find myself in that thinking, it's now becomes like a, it's like a detector, like, oh, there she is again. Okay. Come back, keep coming back. I don't know if that helps, but Carol? I think
Hi
it's Carol.
there. Yeah, it's Carol. Hi, thank you so much for your share. Goodness, just such wonderful things. I'm trying to articulate my question, and you said something about, your job, your boots on the ground job is to do the next available action in alignment with, your sponsor, God, the things that you feel you should
be doing to be more aligned rather than going offline. And I'm paraphrasing, of course. My question is, when you've got that information and you've got the commitment and you know the next available thing that's going to get you to the deal that God has for you, and you don't do it, you don't do what you quote unquote should or committed to or know in your heart is the thing that's going to move you forward, and you're just being stubborn. Does that happen? And how do you work your program? How do you freaking get on back on track and get yourself to do the things that are accepting care? Thanks.
Yes, it happens. But I just wonder, like, what if it's not possible to be off track? What if my higher power is even there? That I think there's, I in coming to a higher power in 12-step recovery, I broke up with a vengeful, spiteful God that needs me to fan his ego. Apologies to those who identify as he, him. But right, so like I don't really want to spend a whole lot of time wondering how to get back. Like, what if every place I am is where I am, and that's all it is just where I am. And so it's less about getting back and more about saying, like, where do we go from here? I think there's this sense of right and wrong that becomes a distraction of like, oh, I have to go back. What, why? Like, where are you right now? Like, for me, part of recovery is being able to locate myself in space and time. Where am I right now? Where would I like to go? In what direction do I need to head? And what if it was less about needing to go back to something, less about needing to be right again, and more about just moving forward, moving on? That's the most peaceful way I can say that. And let me be clear, I don't always live with that level of peace. So I'm not trying to represent myself more gloriously than is true. But I do think that there is a kind of distraction to trying to get back on track. And for me, it's too heavy to bear. It's too heavy to carry around this guilt, shame, frustration. Like, it doesn't serve me for me today, and I can change my mind. So, my phone is too small. Is it Deanna?
Yes, it is. Thank you,
Thank you.
Elizabeth. Deanna, compulsive overeater. Apologies, I did come in late, so if I miss this, please forgive me. But could you share a bit about meditation, about your journey with meditation throughout your recovery and what that's looked like, how that's affected your recovery?
So I didn't specifically address step 11, and I'm happy to do that. In one of the earliest meetings I attended in recovery, there was a 3-minute silent meditation piece included in the meeting. And for me, that's connected to that phrase, keep coming back, right? That oftentimes I would be in that meditation and realize like it was the first time I had relaxed, first time I had come to stillness, first time, right, in however many days it had been since I had last been at that meeting. And it's a reminder of like, keep coming back to a center, keep coming back to my breath, keep coming back to this body that I spent so many decades trying to avoid and ignore and stuff down and constrain and chop off and like, oh my God, like, oh, right, this is where I live. Like, oh, right. The breath is just a reminder that like, the me that's talking is on lo like I'm a renter of this body, right? Like this is how I get to live in the world is in this body. Like she's my ticket to everything. And meditation for me is a reminder to like be here, like in this body. And sometimes meditation is active. I find benefit of doing moving meditation. In recovery, in the last 4 years, I've become a ballroom dancer, and It just reminds me, like in my last competition, like about a month ago, something had happened off the floor, and I couldn't resolve it. And I looked at my teacher, who is my dance partner, and said, "Okay, something's happened. I don't know what to do. I am here with you in this body, in this dress, on this floor. We are dancing." And I promptly forgot about whatever was happening, and went on about the heat. And I think that's a kind of meditation, a kind of like calling myself forward, like locating myself in the present, locating myself in this body. I think the breath in meditation can often do that. That's for me. I may change my mind in 5 minutes, but that's what comes to mind with that question. Vincent?
Hi, Elizabeth, thank you so much for your share. While you were sharing, you went from, qualifying people in a way from elitists, I think you said that at the beginning, to, some of your best friends. Can you talk a little bit about community and how that has helped you in the program?
Yes, thank you. I'm not sure what I want to say anymore about the elitist piece, except that I came from a religious background that divided the world into those who were in and those who were out. And when I first heard that paragraph, like that's what I heard it say. And so I was, very much resisting that. But I have found that my deepest friends are in some kind of recovery, partly because what I think is so beautiful in 12-step recovery is that no one is shocked by what's it called? Relapse, right? Like, in 12-step recovery, there isn't this thing of like, oh my God, how could you? Like, I would never. Like, there's no shock in 12-step. It's just sort of like, yeah, it's part of the deal. Keep coming back. Like it's, and then I find that people in recovery have a set of tools and resources that I don't have to like be on eggshells and wonder like, no, right? Like I do what I do and they can go work their program. And if we need to talk about it, cool, but I don't, right? I can say it, stay on my side of the street because I trust them to have lives that function. And I trust the technology that they're using, which is the steps and a sponsor and outside help if they need it. And right. I was with one of these friends last week and we were shopping for clothes. And I am in a different size recently than I have been. And so I was enamored of a particular garment I was wearing. And she's like, "It doesn't fit you. It's too long. It's too this. It's too the." But I was so enamored of the size, I wanted to buy it because it was a different size. And so like, I wanted to buy the size. I wasn't buying, right? And she's like, "No, it doesn't, stop it. It doesn't fit you." And then, okay, we went on about our day. And about 10 minutes later, she's like, I shouldn't have, I snapped at you. I shouldn't have, what I'm like, she's like, "I hope you aren't offended." And I'm like, "I understood you to be telling me your truth. I didn't understand you to be capital T truth for the universe. You were just telling me your truth." And she said to me, "Oh, well, so I guess I'm just talking to an adult." Yes, that's what's right. So I find that my friends in program are adults. And, until I got to program, some of the first adults I had ever met. And so, in step one in our 12 and 12, when it talks about like we couldn't learn from our mistakes and so we never grew up. Oh my God, it was so helpful to see that in print because I had a suspicion before I came to 12 step that like, what if it's just that I never matured? And I even Googled like, who helps you grow up if you're already an adult? Like, and it really was a sense of like, I didn't know how to human. I didn't know how to like, just right. And so, and the fact that it was in print meant that there was more than one of me. Like, oh my God, somebody else had this problem too. Like they put it in print. There's at least two of us. Like this was so awesome. So yeah, I think it's really helpful for me to have adults in my life who have their own technology. It's not necessary for me to take care of them. It's not necessary for me to be on eggshells. It's not necessary for me to get it right, right? Because they have their own technology. They have their own infrastructure. They have their own scaffolding that keeps them whole. And it's right, like we can bump along together and it's okay. That for me has been super helpful. Is it Ellie?
Yes, it is. Hi, I'm Ellie, compulsive eater. Elizabeth, thank you so much for your words and for your ease. Would you talk about how what you do on a daily basis for your recovery?
Sure. Imperfectly, but it always helps me when I come back to it. Turning over what I actually ate to my sponsor is super helpful. I talk to my sponsor. We're attempting 6 days out of seven. There's one day that it conflicts with my meetings, actually, so we don't talk. I will also say that my food plan, again, is part of my step three, cooperating with care. Like, I work with a nutritionist, and so I monitor my food choices according to that plan. I do not plan my food out in advance, although I have agreed with my nutritionist to make a general meal plan for the week, just so I'm using the food that I buy. And it doesn't work for me to be completely surprised at mealtime as to what the options are. That, you know, there's no need to startle myself. And so I've committed to bringing that back as a practice, attending meetings, at least two. At the beginning, I was attending five or six a week. I'm at two right now, and or, you know, as they need to be. And then writing when I'm particularly spinning, right? Like it, writing really does give it a beginning, middle, and end, so that I can actually locate myself in space and time. Like, oh, that's what it is. Oh, okay. Welcome.